And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. DJ Bucky here. This is our week 14, 10 takeaway podcast. Some big news, some big performances, and in a really, really impactful injury we have to get to today. But first of all, Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. This is my favorite part of the football season because now we're getting down to crunch time. And I think we can really see the teams that are built to play in the postseason and the teams that will quickly fall by the wayside. I think you're seeing the teams that are constructed the right way, meaning they're balanced, not solely dependent upon the quarterback or just one player, have an opportunity to go far in the playoffs.
And I'll tell you what, the college season, the regular season is over. I thought the NFL stepped up some fantastic games, a couple overtime games, coming right down to the wire. Very entertaining week of NFL football. But let's jump in right now. And I hate to do this. We got to go to kind of the worst news of the weekend, but I think it is the biggest news story of the week, and that is the injury to Carson Wentz. At this point in time, it sounds like there's some damage to the ACL. We don't know they'll get that when he gets back into Philadelphia. I'm sure he'll have MRI on Monday, and that news will quickly come out. But it doesn't sound good, Buck. You know, if I was a betting man right now, with everything that you hear, it sounds like this is probably going to end his season. And this is a team with got a big win. We'll get to this game here in a second. But just what's your thoughts initially on the impact of this injury to Carson Wentz, who was really kind of the front runner for the MVP?
It's obviously crushing because you see a young player who was coming to his own in the second season, someone who is very athletic, very dynamic, a guy who had complete control over the offense, and you can see that this offense was built around what he does very, very well. The one thing that I will say about the Philadelphia Eagles, though, I think if any team can withstand the loss of a quarterback, I think their team can. I think they've done a great job of building up all the pieces around the quarterback that Nick Foles, in a pinch, can step in and still get them to win games. You look at the pieces that they added at wide receiver. They have playmakers, Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, Nelson Aguilar. They upgraded the running game with Jay Ajayi joining LeGarrette Blount. Defensively, they have a deep and talented pass rush, and then they have some corners that are beginning to make their impact in the back end. The Philadelphia Eagles are more than Carson Wentz, and I know it's unfortunate because Wentz is a great player, maybe an MVP-caliber player, but I think the Philadelphia Eagles are built the right way. I do not think that they're going to go quietly into the night.
Well, you look at it here, and where they are right now, especially with this big win over the Rams, which Wentz was outstanding, 4 touchdowns before he got hurt. Nick Foles stepped in and was solid in relief. Look, he doesn't have nearly the same life on the ball, not the same velocity, not nearly the same athlete as Carson Wentz, but he was effective, he was efficient, made a couple big throws when he had to, footballs in tight windows. But I'm with you, I think they are more than Carson Wentz. Obviously, he's the key to the whole thing, but when you look at the defense that can rush the passer and you look at a run game that has a chance to carry a ball club, I don't think their defense is at the same level, obviously, as what we saw with the Denver Broncos when they rode that defense to a Super Bowl title. Peyton kind of really almost somewhat holding the team back with his level of play at that point in his career. But I think that's the formula. And you look at them potentially getting a bye, 11-2 right now. You get a bye if they can procure a home field advantage. But if you're talking about two games, you got to find a way to play great defense, run the ball. You got good special teams that can make a play as well. And you got to find a way to win two games and you find yourself in the Super Bowl with Nick Foles. I don't think that's crazy that they could do that. Obviously, a little bit tougher now without Carson Wentz. But I'm with you. I don't think you should write them off just yet.
No, I don't think you should write them off. I think they're certainly going to be there in the end, and I think because of those reasons that we both have talked about, love the quarterback and what the quarterback was doing, but so many more pieces and contributors to the table. This team will continue to be one of the best teams in the NFC. I fully expect them to be in the championship game or more because they have all the pieces of the puzzle that you look for in building a championship squad.
No question. And look, the Rams without Robert Woods, good player for them, they found a way to stay in this game and had a lead in the game late. Jared Goff, I thought, was solid. I'd probably give the head-to-head nod to Carson Wentz with the way he played, but Goff made some big throws. Todd Gurley was outstanding, and so Cooper Kupp going over 100 yards. So it was a good competitive football game, and I think we have a chance to see those two teams square off once again in the postseason. That's number one on the list, Bucky. What do we get to at number two?
The 49ers have found their franchise quarterback.
Play action, Garoppolo boots left, throws to the far side, caught by Selleck, in for the touchdown. Touchdown, 49ers.
Hey, I'll be the first to admit, DJ, that I worried about the Jimmy G hype train kind of going out of control. But Jimmy Garoppolo is a franchise quarterback if I ever saw one. And the reason I can confidently say that he is a franchise quarterback, because a team that he joined, the San Francisco 49ers, struggled moving the ball until Jimmy Garoppolo got there. When he gets into the starting lineup, not only have they won two games in a row, but this offense is now beginning to move the ball up the field. For me, by definition, a franchise quarterback is a guy that can raise the level of play of everyone around him. I believe that he has elevated the level of play of these pedestrian receivers, a nondescript running game, and a team that really struggled with an identity. Jimmy G gives them hope, and because of that, I believe they are well positioned to make a quick return to prominence, because Jimmy G is the quarterback that they need, and his presence will allow them to devote their efforts to other areas of the team to get them back in the mix.
Two things that impressed me about him. Forget the arm talent, forget athletic ability. To me, the two things that stand out in the limited chance we've seen him with the Niners, we obviously saw him a little bit more with the Patriots. To me, Bucky, I look at a guy that looks extremely poised and looks extremely confident. You could all throw comfortable in there as well. It doesn't feel big at all for Garoppolo. He's just stepped right in with a very average supporting cast, and right, he has elevated the level of play. And I think they've got a chance now. Once you get this piece in place, which they have now,
so much
it becomes
easier.
A lot easier to build around them. That's the hardest piece of the puzzle, and I think they've got it there in San Fran.
Yeah, I do think they have it. And I know we had talked about Cousins could still be in play. He very well could be in play. But I will say the advantages of Jimmy G in this scenario would be he becomes significantly cheaper than what Kirk Cousins would be. And I think there's something too. The more he plays this year, the more they win, the more those guys are going to bond and connect with him in terms of the players in the locker room. And I don't know if you want to mess that chemistry up, because these guys are on a two-game winning streak, and they may win a couple more before the season ends. That says a lot about what Jimmy G has brought to the table, and he hasn't even really mastered the playbook yet.
No question. It's going to be interesting to watch them continue to develop. You've got a talented quarterback with a very talented play caller there. And Kyle Shanahan, I think the future looks bright for the 49ers. Number three on the list, it's pretty simple. Dak is back on track. Little Dr. Seuss.
Second and five. Back to Prescott's left. This is a blitz, and they throw a slant to Dez, and he caught it and broke away 40, 30, 20. A block from Beasley and into the end zone, and there's your big play.
Yeah, you look at the way Dak Prescott played in a must-have game. This is a 10-10 ball game with eight and change left. And then this Cowboys team kind of put away the Giants, but he finishes up 20 of 30, 332, three touchdowns, no picks. Coming off a game against the Redskins where they put up 30-plus points, 38 points in that one, two touchdowns, no picks. So he's protecting the football. He's taking those opportunities that are presented himself. Had the long touchdown pass to the running back, Rod Smith. Didn't have to throw it very far. Got a little screen, and he was off to the races. But I thought Dak Prescott did a nice job in this ballgame, kind of controlling things at the line of scrimmage. Kept them from turning the ball over, kept them out of negative plays, and they found a way to survive. Bucky, we've been beating this drum for so long now. The NFC, do not let the Cowboys, their best players out for 6 weeks. Do not let them sneak into the playoffs, get Zeke Elliott back. They'll be a dangerous football team. We've said the same thing about the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. We'll get to them in just a little bit. But right now, this Cowboy team, with Sean Lee back on defense and Dak Prescott playing the way he's playing, knowing Zeke's coming back, it's a dangerous group.
Absolutely dangerous, and they're dangerous because of the reasons that you mentioned. The Dallas Cowboys needed to be able to find an identity separate and apart from Ezekiel Elliott being in the mix. The past couple weeks when he has been on the sideline, he has actually helped this team find other ways of winning. So now when he comes back into the fold, if something happens to him, he sprains an ankle in the middle of a game, he does something that leads him to be removed from the field, this offense now has confidence that they have a style of play that will allow them to continue to win. I think that really, really improves them and makes them a more formidable team in the postseason.
Yeah, Rod Smith, have a day. Six carries for 47 and a touchdown. And then through the air, over 100 yards, 5 for 113 and a touchdown, including the 81-yarder. So he was a big contributor filling in there for Zeke Elliott. What's number four on the list, Buck?
The Jaguars' defense is the new gold standard.
He goes deep down the field for Doug Baldwin in the end zone, and it's intercepted by the Jaguars in the back of the end zone. Jalen Ramsey picked it off. The ball was hanging up in the air, and Ramsey in the back of the end zone runs underneath it for his fourth interception of the season.
You know, this warms my heart, being a former Jaguar guy who really enjoyed his time down in Jacksonville. It has been a long time coming to see the Jaguars come back. And when I look at the Jaguars, I couldn't take my eyes off their defense because I am really, really convinced that they are the new gold standard on defense in terms of how you build it, how you play, what you're looking for, and the way that it is coached. When you look at this team, they lead the league in sacks. They do a great job in coverage. They have blue chip players, multiple blue chip players at every level of the defense. They're young, athletic, and hungry. And I think if you are an evaluator, you have to look at the way this team was constructed over a 3 or 4 year period and say that, man, if I had an opportunity to rebuild a defense, I am going to follow that model. Meaning I'm going to get pass rushers and cornerbacks, and then I'm going to get run and chase players who may be a little undersized, but they have attitude. When you put all of that together, what we saw was the bully get bullied when Seattle came to town. Seattle's a team that normally likes to impose their will on their opponents. Jacksonville was not having it. And I tweeted out, this reminded me when I was a kid of Larry Holmes fighting Muhammad Ali with the mustache. Muhammad Ali is still the guy that you remember being the greatest of all time, but Larry Holmes was not having it. Tonight, we absolutely had an opportunity to see Jacksonville was not having it. They took the torch away from the Seattle Seahawks.
And last week, you saw Blake Bortles. We talked about him on the podcast, throw for over 300 yards, completing 74% of his passes, 2 touchdowns, no picks, a clean football game for them, and a big win over the Indianapolis Colts. We go, okay, it's the Colts. They're not a great defense. That's how much we read into this. Blake backs that up against the Seattle Seahawks defense with missing pieces of that secondary, still very well respected, a good group. And he comes out there, completes 67% of his passes, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and was a really a key reason why they won this football game. Blake Bortles has picked the right time to be playing his best ball to complement that defense. Now they're running, I think they're the number one run team in the league. Like Fournette goes over 100 yards. So they're starting to look like more of a complete team and not just a defense dominant squad right now, Bucky. This could be a dangerous group once we get to the postseason.
Absolutely dangerous. I tweeted this out and I meant it. If this Blake Bortles shows up in the postseason, the Jaguars have a legitimate chance to get to the Super Bowl. If the guy that played against the Seattle Seahawks and the Indianapolis Colts showed up, a guy who played with confidence, a guy who played with real sound judgment, didn't give the ball away, and who made accurate throws to the playmakers on the perimeter, the Jacksonville Jaguars absolutely have the pieces to be able to be one of the last teams standing at the end of the year. Love their defense. Love what they're doing offensively. As much as I talk about Blake Bortles playing well, Leonard Fournette, that icing run, 3rd and 10, they give it to him out of I formation, 2 back sets, 2 tight ends, and he grinds it out and gets the first down. He gives them the thump and the attitude. I'm telling you, the Jacksonville Jaguars look like the old version of the Seattle Seahawks. Be careful. If the quarterback gets it right, be careful because they can go.
No question. They're playing really, really good football right now, and with the Tennessee Titans – and their struggles, looks like this is their division right now to go ahead and take that thing. Let's get on to number 5 on the list. And I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but the Cincinnati Bengals, yeah, it's time. They need a fresh start.
And it's a handoff. Howard busting through 5. End zone, touchdown. We're kidding for 21. And the Bears have broken out in front of the Bengals here on a 21-yard Jordan Howard touchdown run.
Yeah, look, Bucky, let me just give you the numbers. It's pretty simple here. In this ballgame, the Cincinnati Bengals had 234 yards of offense. They gave up 232 rushing yards to the Chicago Bears. This is a Bears team limped into this ballgame at 3-9. I don't want to use the word quit. I don't like that word when you're talking about a team. But let's just say the Cincinnati Bengals were less than enthused to be out there on this ball game. It was flat. They had no energy whatsoever. I know it's a physical game they're coming off of against Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh found a way to rally and beat the Baltimore Ravens, a much better football team than the Bears. I thought the Bengals completely laid an egg in this one at home. I know Marvin Lewis has been there a long time. He's taken them to the playoffs a bunch. I think it's best for both parties at this point in time. I think the message is stale. I think it's time that they look in a new direction and try and start rebuilding this football team in Cincinnati. This is old, it's tired, and it ain't working.
No, it's definitely not working this year. I will say that at one point when I looked at their roster, I thought they assembled a nice roster, maybe a top 10 roster in terms of the number of pure talent guys that they have. But this year, for whatever reason, it's not working. First, it was the offense failing to get on track, so they got rid of Sam Peasy. They elevate Bill Lazor. He has a nice little run where they're going. But in this last game, I'm going to be honest with you, Andy Dalton was horrible. Andy Dalton, his inability to make simple throws, simple connections, led them to remove him and put A.J. McCarron in. And right now, where the Bengals are, it's a wrap. It's done. They're not going to the postseason. So what are we doing over the next few weeks? Who are we looking at? Who can be vital contributors to the way that we rebuild the program? That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm trying to find. I'm trying to find a few good men who can come out and compete.
Yeah, it's not pretty. On the other side of things, got to give credit to the Bears. Trubisky, I thought, had one of his best games as a young pro. 25-32, 271, a touchdown, no picks. Also, I believe, yeah, he had a rushing touchdown as well. So he was effective both ways. And Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, man, they went off in this game. Jordan Howard, 147, averaging over 6 a carry. Tariq Cohen, 80 yards and only 12 carries. He averages over 6 yards a carry. So, I mean, look, this Bears team, talent-wise, you stack them up 1-53 against Cincinnati, Buck. I don't think it's close. I think Cincinnati is a much more talented football team, but they did not want to be on the field in this game. I thought it showed.
No, I think it definitely showed up. I think the big thing with the Chicago Bears, and here's where I think Bears fans can be encouraged. We saw this season a difference that an upgrade in the supporting cast and a change in the play caller can make on the fortunes of a young quarterback. We saw Carson Wentz, Jerry Goff both take their games up a notch. I think with Mitch Trubisky, I think if the Chicago Bears are able to find a veteran pass catcher that has some juice left, that he can be a number one, I think you will see his game rapidly improve to the level of expectation, because he has shown that with just running backs and tight ends, he can move the team down the field. If you give him some legitimate studs on the outside where people have to really defend the studs, yeah, it could be scary for what they have going on.
All right, before we get to these last five takeaways, Buck, let's give some information to the folks out there. If you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or even if you have a side gig, let me introduce you to Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system.
Grasshopper lets you send and receive calls and texts from your new business phone number. That way you can run your business from anywhere and respond to clients quickly with Grasshopper's mobile apps.
Yeah, sign up today. Go to grasshopper.com/sticks. That's grasshopper.com/sticks. Get $20 off your first month. That's grasshopper.com/sticks. All right, Buck, let's keep this train rolling here. Halfway done. Get us a number six on the list.
Josh Gordon could spark a Cleveland Browns resurgence in 2018.
Kaiser to throw, looking, Gordon up in the air. What a catch! Touchdown! He is back at First Energy Stadium. Josh Gordon with a leaping grab, pulls it in, tumbles into the end zone, and the Browns are a kick away from tying it up.
Hey, DJ, we talked about this while we were watching Josh Gordon in amazement. The fact that this guy can come off the streets and be an A1 playmaker right away suggests to me that if he can keep his life straight off the field, he can be a dominant player for the Cleveland Browns. He can, in fact, be a player that is a core to their rebuilding hopes, because the Cleveland Browns team that I saw today with Josh Gordon as the centerpiece, they're a team that can show up and win a ton of games. He elevated the play of the quarterback with his presence on the field. He also elevated the play of the supporting cast with all of those guys going back to their respective roles. We saw Corey Coleman step up and make plays as a number two. We saw Duke Johnson be a factor in the passing game. Because he is the guy that you can kind of revolve everything around, I believe he is the key to the Cleveland Browns bouncing back. If he is available and if he's capable of being able to play at the level that he is displayed, I absolutely believe that the Cleveland Browns will bounce back, and he will be the guy that leads them on their bounce back.
I swear I would look into this if I were the Browns. I would try and find somebody that can be a good influence on him, that can also kind of just look after him, and I would have them with like Josh Gordon.
Josh Hamilton was with the Rangers, same thing.
Yeah, I just think it's smart. It's just an investment for the Cleveland Browns. This is a team, and we've said it, to win big in this league. What's our number of blue chip players? What do we say, like 8 to 10?
8 to 10 will get you to the championship level.
They need 8 to 10 blue chip players. They don't have a lot of blue chip players. Josh Gordon is 100% a blue chip player. So if you can keep him out of trouble and keep him on task, I mean, I've said, look, we've said it during the broadcast, he is a faster Mike Evans. That's what he brings to the table. He is a freak show. And having him out there, I don't understand why they didn't give him the ball more. At 3 for 69, I think all that might have came in the first half, if not the first half early in the third quarter. Only 6 targets for him in the game. They've got to find a way to get him more involved because he makes things happen. Throw him jump balls, do whatever you got to do. Watch him make magic happen after the catch. He is a special athlete. It was fun. The Browns did not win this game, but it was a fun game to watch. And I think the main reason for that was because what we saw from Josh Gordon. He made DeShone Kizer look a lot better than what we'd seen Kizer look like earlier in the season. But again, we get to the end of the game, the Browns kind of do what they do. And you have a boneheaded interception by Kizer in overtime, and then they give up the score there to Davante Adams on a little tunnel screen. But overall, I thought it was a fun game to watch with this version of the Browns. What do you say, Buck?
Oh, it was a terrifically enjoyable game to watch. I think the main thing, I came away disappointed in the fact that the Browns couldn't finish the game. It was right there for them to finish the game. They were up 14 points. They had plenty of opportunities to close it out. The defense let them down a little bit. And then at the very, very end, DeShone Kizer was trying to find Josh Gordon on a slant. The slant would have kind of sealed the game. Paused on it, threw it up for grabs in overtime. Easy interception for them. And then the Cleveland Browns just give it away at the very end. But in spite of all that, I thought we saw DeShone Kizer play with more poise, more confidence, really made the plays, opened up the field, and utilized all of his weapons. I think this is actually a solid building block for this team making the turnaround. Josh Gordon should be a critical piece in their rebuilding effort. Just got to figure out if you can trust him.
No question. Hopefully they can find a way to get that going next year. I will say, looking at their schedule, they're going 0-16. That was their shot today. I don't think they're winning the ball game this year.
Who else is left on the schedule?
I know they've got Baltimore and Pittsburgh, I believe, will have something to play for. And I believe the Bears is the third team who are playing better football right now. I don't see them winning a game, Buck. I really don't. I think they're going to go over. That would make them 1-31.
They're going to beat the Bears.
That's it. No. It's Ravens at home and then at Bears at Steelers to close it out.
Oh, they beat the Bears.
No. They're going over.
Circle that game. Red letters.
Woo. Nope.
They can beat the Bears. And they can beat
1-31 over a 2-year period. That is hard to do.
They can beat the brakes off of them.
By the way, we'll get into on our next podcast in a couple days here. We'll jump into John Dorsey and what his chance for success there is in Cleveland. It's something we've talked about and been calling for, and I think we'll have a chance to dig a little deeper into that on the next podcast. So be on the lookout for that if you're a Browns fan. All right, let's get to the next one here. Phillip Rivers, this dude is playing like a top 3 quarterback.
Center is Rivers, fakes the handoff, rolling to his right is Rivers, going deep, has a receiver, Tyrell Williams makes the catch, 25-20, to the house, Rivers to Tyrell Williams, 75 yards, knock on wood.
I love listening to Money make those calls.
Chargers win!
Yes, thank you. I will ask for that Chargers win drop another time before this episode is over. Bucky, the Chargers, this is a ball club, has won 4 in a row, as hot as anybody in the league right now. They lose in overtime to Jacksonville, a game they should have won. Then they would have had even a longer streak going. But look just the last 3 games of what Phillip Rivers has done here. Against Dallas, he throws for 434 yards. That was Thanksgiving, I believe. 434 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Then you go up against Cleveland, 344 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. Then Washington today, 319 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. I believe I did see one stat that floated around. Said he's now joined a club of 3 guys, which the other 2 are Breeze and Peyton Manning. 10 straight years, over 3,500 yards passing for Phillip Rivers. I don't know how it's possible. I think this guy definitely belongs in the MVP race. But to me, Bucket, I don't know how it's possible. He does not get more national attention for the way that he's played, especially when we've seen Roethlisberger kind of go up and down over the last few years, and now you've seen Eli Manning completely fall apart. I know he doesn't have the rings that those guys have, but in terms of the longevity, I give Phillip Rivers a nod for the way he's playing at this age.
Yeah, no, I think it's tough. Phillip Rivers has played outstanding football this season. I think they've given him more at the line of scrimmage to do. A lot of empty formation, motion to back in and out of the lineup, see what the coverage is, then make the proper check based on what you see. I think he's handled it like in splendid fashion. I think the big thing for him is to continue to understand how important it is to make sure that you take care of the ball, allow your defense to set you up to win games. If he just plays a smart game, the L.A. Chargers are going to be there in the rear.
Now, one thing you know, if they continue to throw for 300 yards and play defense like they do, we're going to hear a lot of Matt Money Smith.
Chargers win!
Sully, you're at least three counts late on that, at least. One
no,
more time.
Two and a half.
One more
maybe.
Time.
Chargers win!
Bonus.
Bonus.
Chargers win!
Thank you.
One
All right,
time.
That works. What you got
Chargers
next,
win!
Can't hear that enough.
That's so good. What you got, Bucky?
Man, we're seeing a next generation of young quarterbacks struggle.
Fires over the middle, picked off by Bynes at the 40. Runs it back to the 30, far side of the 25, to the 20 and out of bounds. And a late hit out of bounds as well. Here comes a flag. Josh Bynes dropping into coverage, picks off Marcus Mariota. A huge turn of events here at University of Phoenix Stadium.
They'll throw deep middle, and the pass will be deflected. It'll be intercepted. Stephen Terrell at the 5 and goes down to a knee, and the Chiefs get the pick they want. Winston's going to be sacked at the 24, fumble the ball. It's loose, recovered by the Buccaneers, I believe. We have 6 seconds, now 5. Clock will continue to tick. This game is over. Detroit will beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-21.
Lot to digest right there. I mean, that was a long, long drag. But mainly, like, my point is we're seeing some guys that we thought were ready to break out as superstars kind of take a step back. Marcus Mariota, Derek Carr, and even Jameis Winston. These guys last year kind of teased us and led us to believe that they were going to be guys that were game changers. We expected to see one or two of these guys kind of rise up to the ranks of maybe being in the top 5 to 8 players at their respective position. And I can go on record and say that we haven't seen that from any of these guys. Marcus Mariota struggled today. He's a guy that has more interceptions than touchdowns, 10 to 14 ratio respectively. Passer rating is at 76.9. And in the last three games, in each of the last three games, he has been below 200 passing yards. That is not the kind of stuff you want to see from your number one quarterback. Derek Carr is not playing on the pace that he was playing at last year. Last year he had 28 touchdowns, only 6 picks. Right now he's at 18-10. But when you look at him, and I know he's dealing with an injury, he's not sharp, he's not accurate, he's not decisive, and he doesn't have the poise. And then finally, Jameis Winston continues to be a roller coaster ride, because if you looked at just the tape and you didn't look at the numbers, you would think that he wasn't having a solid season. Numbers-wise, 14-8 touchdown interception ratio. Does have 4 fumbles, don't like that. Passer rating is just under 90. But when you feel him and look at him, there's something not quite what at that level where we thought he would be. I need to see him and all of these guys continue to take another step in their development, whether it's here or somewhere else. They got to pick it up.
Yeah, one thing I will say, if you want some encouragement, is that there's no magic formula where every year you're guaranteed to play better than you did the previous year, but there's also nothing that says you can't rebound from. We see a lot of these quarterbacks have a down year, and you got to respond, and you got to rebound, and you got to get better. We've seen Matt Ryan, you know, come off of this one year and go out and win the MVP. So you can turn it around, but right now the thing that concerns me, if I just with Marcus Mariota, Bucky, I think the way that they've used him, we've said kind of smoke and mirrors, the stuff that they've done. I like sprinkling in the RPO stuff and movement stuff, but I don't think that can be your bread and butter. And I don't know that he's progressed in terms of just being a pure pop guy. And that's going to come back to a little bit, okay, the offense he ran at Oregon, how does that translate? Those questions we had and how that transition would go. They found a way to duplicate it initially, but this league is smart. They start taking those things away, and you've mentioned it. Now they see some main coverage, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. And the ability just to hang in there, work through progressions, make tight window throws on a consistent basis has just not happened. We haven't seen that development that you want to see from a young guy. And I think some of that is to blame on the Tennessee staff, just in terms of how they put this offense together. You need somebody, you got to throw him in the pool and let him go. Let him swim and go through a prolonged period here. We can see him develop, and I think the training wheels have been on, and it's painful to watch, to be honest.
Very painful. He's struggling because he's not a very, very confident player at the moment. And this is the first time he's maybe had some real on-field football adversity in terms of not being the best guy on the field every time he steps on. And so it will be interesting to see what can the Tennessee Titans do to help him get back into his sweet spot. Can they put him in some easy high completion percentage passes that will allow him to kind of see the ball go into basket early, like a layup artist? Or will they continue to try and, like, scheme it up and do some things to mask his own personal flaws? I think the main thing is you need to have a sit-down with Marcus Mariota. Let him go through the film. Let him kind of dictate the terms. Let him write down 10 to 15 plays that he really, really feels good about and just run those plays over and over and over again from different sets. I think the main thing is you want him playing with confidence and swag, just like he was able to play for most of his time at the University of Oregon.
All right, number nine on the list. This is a game they actually play twice a year. Steelers-Ravens, always a really, really interesting contest, a physical affair. This one was no different, and the Steelers end up getting a win and capture the AFC North title.
Roethlisberger deep down the right sideline. Antonio Brown, he's amazing. Beast Carr on the play. Brown, 213 receiving yards tonight.
Yeah, that was a big-time completion to set the Steelers up for their game-winning field goal. Bucky, what's your thoughts on not giving any help over the top of Antonio Brown in that situation?
I think it was silly. I think everyone in the building knew that the ball was going to Antonio Brown somewhere in that situation. He's your best offensive player outside of Lev Bell. And the quarterback, you got to get him involved. You're leaning on a pass-happy situation. I believe that they should have just kind of go for it, make sure that they neutralize him, make them throw the ball to Martavis Bryant or one of those other guys, one of the guys that you feel strongly about containing. But you can't let this guy run a simple nine route down the boundary and get it without being knocked out, knocked around, picked off. Just shouldn't happen. Should never happen.
Yeah, you got to give the Steelers credit, though. This is a game where the Ravens kind of had control of it, two-score ball game. And the Steelers do what they do. They get big stops, and then Ben just take what they give you, take what they give you. And then the opportunity presents itself down the field. Take your shot to 84. He goes over 200 yards. Antonio Brown, what a stud he is. And I got to believe when they face off against the New England Patriots next week, that will be the focus to take away Antonio Brown.
He will absolutely be double teamed next week. They will not let him skate on the perimeter unchecked. Yeah, he'll get all kinds of double team action.
A little different. I think we'll see a little different from Bill Belichick next week. All right, what's number 10? What's the final one on the list this week?
The NFC South race is heating up after the Panthers and Falcons hold serve at home.
Pivotal play here. Matt Ryan and the Falcons down 7 with 10 minutes to go. Low snap. Ryan handles it from the gun. Ryan steps up. Rifles. End zone. Caught. Touchdown. Sanu to the post. Ryan delivers.
Keenum throws a long pass down the field, knocked away, almost intercepted. The Panthers hold and will win this football game.
You know, DJ, when you look at the NFC South, you're seeing a very, very competitive race kind of shake out. The Panthers and the Saints are sitting at 9-4. The Atlanta Falcons have climbed their way back into it at 8-5. And any of these teams can win the division. It really comes down to who is going to play the best during this next three-week stretch. And if you look at the way the Carolina Panthers are being able to do it, it's going to be hard for them to match the kind of points that New Orleans can put up. I think it's still going to be a situation where the New Orleans Saints go, but now the Carolina Panthers and the Atlanta Falcons are duking it out for the last spot.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the very end. These teams will face off here as we come down the stretch, three games to go. So we get a chance to sort that out on the field. I think right now, if I'm looking at who's the most dangerous team, I might go with the Panthers, just the way Cam Newton is dialed in right now. And man, when he gets rolling, Bucky, there's nobody like him. We kind of call him the unicorn because just the combination of the height, weight, speed, arm talent, playmaking ability, his long run. Are you kidding me? What he did against the Minnesota Vikings today, Sendejo comes down in the hole, a safety. You shouldn't have a quarterback make you look that dumb. But he put on a move on him and started running away from everybody.
I mean, he's a unique player, unique talent. You have to cultivate it. You have to develop it. You have to know exactly what he is to maximize what he brings to the table. I think the big thing when you look at all of these teams, the teams that are still going to be a viable option are going to be the ones that play really, really good defense. Each of these teams has played really, really good defense this year. So then it comes down to quarterback play, and which quarterback do you trust the most? Of all those quarterbacks, I don't know. I think it's a toss-up depending on how you would like to play the game. And so a couple things that will be the deciding factor, quarterback play and defense, whichever one is able to put that combination of two together, they're going to have an opportunity to fly the flag.
Question real quick, Bucky. Saints, Panthers, Falcons, all three of those quarterbacks you mentioned coming out of the quarterback position, I believe they all have MVPs. They have a trophy hanging out in their room. So, yep. Man, it's going to be fun to watch this battle down the home stretch here. Maybe the Bucs can play spoiler and upset one of these teams, but they're not a lot of fight in the 4-9 Tampa Bay Bucs right now. We'll see how this whole thing shakes out. Well, look, Week 14 was a great week of football. Unfortunate injuries here and there, but overall I thought the football was well played. It was competitive. It was physical. It was fun. College football season, regular season ended, and I thought the NFL stepped their game up. Any final thoughts as we wrap up here, Buck?
No, a great week of football. Kind of like hoping and praying that everything is okay for Carson Wentz. Still sending up prayers every night. Ryan Shazier hoping he bounces back. But we got some young stars in this league, man. We want to see them all have an opportunity to play and do those things that really make us light up. Carson Wentz is a tough one. Hopefully we'll get better than anticipated news.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that about Ryan Shazier too. Thoughts and prayers out to him as he's recovering from that really a tough back injury. Hopefully he gets all feeling back, and we'll see him up and moving around here pretty soon. I don't even want to pretend to care about the football side of it. Let's get Ryan Shazier up and walking around playing with his kids. That's what's most important here. He's in our thoughts. He's in our prayers. That's going to do it for us here on Move the Sticks. Again, Move the Sticks presented by the Ford F-Series. We'll be back here in a couple days, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.